Welcome to another edition of Anglican Unscripted. This is episode 850. I'm Kevin Coulson.
I'm George Conger. Today's April 9th, 2024.
All right, welcome to another episode of Anglican Unscripted. We're glad you could join us. This is our happy place. This is where Kevin and George sit down and we get to hash ourselves over the news, over events that are going on around the world. And we also have our own funny stories that we tell each other off camera and off on camera. So we're glad you're here. We're glad you like it. And we hope we can give you some information about what's happening around the Anglican Communion this week. George, how you doing?
Great, fantastic. Well, I lie. I went to the cardiologist, the urologist, and the pulmonologist today. So I've had two showers today, and I won't explain why. But whenever a man goes to urologist, he usually wants to take a shower when he gets home.
Yeah, it's an icky thing, but it keeps us healthy and living longer. I mean, if you go from, you know, the Middle Ages when the average lifespan was 35 to 40 years, we're now up to 80 and 85 years. In another generation, they'll be pushing 100 years. They have to look around and poke around and make sure everything's running, George. And you got a new pacemaker and you're all checked out. So you can do at least another 150 episodes. That'll take us up to 1,000. Oh, that's crazy, George. All these years, almost 10 years now, we've been doing the show. That's just crazy.
Yeah, we're still not making money.
No, there's no money out there. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Early in the episode here, we're still raising funds for George to go to. You're going to Cairo.
Egypt.
Egypt. Yep, Alexandria, Egypt, to attend the Global South function. We've raised about $1,000. We need about $1,500 more. So if you want to go to Anglican, you can spell it. It's not Anglican. It's anglican.inc/donate, and you can help send George on to another continent. All right, so if nobody was paying attention, yesterday here in North America, right down the middle, we had an eclipse. I got to see it in its totality, and wow. Okay, I've been around the world. I've seen many things. And I think that the eclipse is one of the top things they've ever seen, a total eclipse. You know, my brother was in Wisconsin. He sent me pictures. Not a big deal. No, you need to be right here in Arkansas. And we just saw it was amazing because you can look in your glasses as it's building up. You can see it going across. And at about 98% coverage, it's still not the area around you, the atmosphere around you has dimmed a lot. It's dimmed like 50% in that hour it took for the moon to go over the sun. But that last 1%, when you fully get the coverage, it dims, it'll go another 50%. And so you're looking at like 25% light that you had 15 minutes ago. And all the animals stopped. All the sounds stopped. And I'm sitting with a group of people just going, wow, wow, wow. So if you ever get a chance in your continent to see an eclipse, I recommend it. It's 4 minutes of wow, wow, wow. So that's, so that's what I did. If you want to know, we are traveling again this summer. We're going from Florida way over here somewhere out west to Utah, Idaho. That's just a quick glance at the map of my trip until September. But we got news, George. Let's go on to the news stories here. Our first news story is the Dignitas Infinitas. Infita. How do you pronounce? I'm not a Latin guy, George. Okay, pronounce that for me.
Dignitas Infinita.
Yeah, it's a paper on gender ideology. And I think the liberals are happy. Well, let's talk about this.
It's a Francis paper. There's good and there's bad. Now, we shared with you on Friday. It was coming out on Monday, and remembered the things I was talking about were not this paper, but rather the work that is being done in preparation for the next series of papers. the Teilhard de Chardin stuff and the Cosmic Christ. This paper has been under work for about 5 years, they said, and it came out, and a surface quick reading has some good stuff in it. They're against sex change surgery, transgenderism. They're against in vitro fertilization or surrogacy, you know, where a gay couple hires a woman to bear a child for them. Mm-hmm. And it's against gender ideology. Well, George, those are all great things. Why are you still not just saying, oh, this is the best thing since sliced bread? Because there's as much and if not more bad things in this. And it takes time to basically dig all through things. But I want to make 2 points because I'm not prepared to give a full critique. But that very first paragraph gives the game away, because it talks about that first paragraph that human beings have an infinite dignity, it says.
Ooh, and whoa, stop. No, that's not how it works.
And Kevin, you know that's not true. I know that's not true. What? Any Christian who has gone to Sunday school knows that's not true. And why is it not true?
Well, God is the only infinite dignity being there ever is, will be. We can never hope for that. We were not designed for that.
Yeah, this is almost a species of Mormonism, that we one day shall be gods too.
Yes.
That we have such infinite dignity because only God has infinite dignity. Hmm. And when we rebel against God, we lose what dignity we have. Our dignity is only a reflection of what God gives us. And when we violate God's laws, when we, I'll pause there. But this is what I would call a Peronist document. You know, Francis is from Argentina. He's always emulated Juan Perón, the dictator from the 40s. And Perón would do something on the right, then he would do something on the left, and he would play both sides on them against the middle. He's a Justin Welby character, saying to people what they want to hear. And so we've got a few things that satisfy the conservatives who don't want to read past the main headings. And then we have the liberals. When Father James Martin, the Jesuit from America Magazine, who is one of the leading public advocates for changing the church's teaching on homosexuality, comes out saying, this is a wonderful document, I want to ask myself, what am I not seeing that he's seeing? Well, when you get deeper and deeper and deeper into this, that there's just a sense of perversion of the human anthropology. But yeah. This is all for another story, when another day when we've had a chance to actually sink our teeth into this.
So yeah, I mean, but it's another slippery slope that we're going to this type of document takes us down. Well, and in a big way, it does reteach in a different way the doctrine. You know, because we're changing the definition of what it means to be a human, what it means to be transgender, what it means to do these things. And in as such, you're changing the doctrine if you're changing the definitions. Let's move on to our next story. Now, we didn't report this, and just forgive us for not telling you this, but we had heard through a source that a Ugandan bishop was denied entry into this country, was denied a visa a couple weeks ago. That's when we heard the story. I don't know the exact date he was denied a visa. And from all intents and purposes, we understand that it was because of Uganda's laws against homosexuality. And the State Department is a very powerful entity in America and outside of America. And They're taking their reign further, George.
Yeah, we heard from an ACNA bishop that a Ugandan bishop was denied a visa to enter the United States, and the reason was because of the Church of Uganda and the Nation of Uganda's support for the anti-LGBT legislation, which, by the way, the Ugandan Supreme Court upheld last week in a final hearing on it. And this ties into what we just talked about of dignitas infinita, that if all people have this infinite dignity, the outlawing or criminalization of certain acts, which the Catholic Church on one hand teaches cry out to heaven for punishment, or which are intrinsically disordered, those people still have the infant dignity to practice those acts. Yes. And therefore, the State Department is basically now following a Francis line that if you're not going to respect the infinite dignity of everybody that we respect in the ways that we define dignity, then you are a bad person.
That's crazy. So let's talk about the new law.
The U.S. law or the Ugandan law?
The U.S. law, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. coincidentally, with all this, the same State Department who refused to give a visa to one of the Ugandan bishops has now proposed changing some rules, regulations. This is how the bureaucratic state operates. They don't actually bother with Congress anymore. They just take the old rules and then they update them based upon the whims of the people in power. Well, the State Department has announced new guidelines for any entity that in any way receives federal funding for overseas assistance. Now, who would that be? Samaritan's Purse, Episcopal Migration Ministries, Catholic Charities, the Salvation Army. If you've got a dime in your $10 million budget that could be traced to the U.S. government, you must now not discriminate in employment practices against those who do not share your faith perspective. Now, what does this mean in practice? This means that Catholic Charities, Samaritan's Purse, Billy Graham Evangelistic Organization, they must now hire people who are transgender, who are gays and lesbians.
This would even mean the Episcopal Church. Well, they must be going crazy.
Well, Kevin, I have to tell you, the Episcopal Church has not joined the lawsuit filed by the Southern Baptists and Samaritan Purse and other people trying to prevent this rule from coming into play. In other words, the U.S. government is basically telling us that you must now conform your faith to these secular religious systems and belief. Doesn't matter that you may be using this money for feeding the poor, doing things the U.S. government says is a good thing, because you wouldn't get it anyway if it wasn't a good thing. But rather, we will not even allow you to serve others unless you fully embrace our worldview and our ideology.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, here in America, it's crazy to watch this happen because it's not a law. It's a State Department. It's like watching the IRS slowly take all your money. The State Department is slowly draining the last of our morals. In Texas, I think it was Dallas or Waco, Texas, they arrested people for feeding the homeless because the food was not prepared in a proper kitchen. Things like that just drive me crazy. All right, your State Department is doing.
We see this with our own U.S. Department of Education.
Yep.
They are changing their rules of Title IX about making women's sports equal to men.
Yeah.
They're changing the rules to now have gender expression so that if you do not allow transgender people to participate in women's sports, because not many women are participating in men's sports, but if you do not allow men to participate in women's sports, you may not get any federal money of any sort whatsoever. It's the same sort, and this has not been passed by Congress. This is just the Biden administration, whether it's the State Department or the Department of Education or what have you. It's the same with the Army, with gender ideology and DEI and all this nonsense.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to our next story. Next story, Elon Musk may be arrested and jailed in Brazil.
Yes.
Apparently, there's a spat between censorship and Brazil. Some people support censorship like they do here in America, and they want Elon Musk to start blocking people. And this actually gets church leaders involved in the discussion, George. And they have to be careful.
Very carefully involved. Carefully. Very carefully involved. Yeah. Alexander de Moraes is a Supreme Court judge in Brazil who's going a bit crazy. And if you look at him, the fellow looks demonic. He's got a shaved head, dark eyes, dark eyebrows. He looks like he's some advertisement for Satanism 101.
Allegedly, well, looks demonic.
Yes. Allegedly. He has issued an order charging Elon Musk, the owner of X, or it used to be called Twitter, mm-hmm. of disinformation, disregarding court orders, and obstruction of justice. And he's seeking to shut down Twitter and demands that they block certain people and that they censor certain speech that he, the judge, doesn't like. So this is full-blown freedom of speech issue and censorship. And of course, where's the U.S. government? Is there going to protect a very major American corporation? No, of course not. They're on the side of the Brazilian government. Well, here's a funny little Anglican side of it. The pro-Episcopal Church, IEAB, Igreja Episcopal Anglicana do Brasil, they're all in favor of the Lula government and all this pro-censorship talk, because they think that it needs to be stamped out, all these Christian nationalists and white nationalists and Klansmen and everything that they have running around Brazil. They think it should be stamped out, while the Anglican Church, the one affiliated with the ACNA and the Global South, is on the free speech side. Now, the problem is the Anglican Church has to keep their nose clean because they can wind up in jail,
yeah.
As a number of the political opponents of this judge have been placed in jail. Mm-hmm. So it's a delicate situation, and you and I can be jokey about it, but it's really for the people in Brazil, this is life and death. Their government is at the edge of falling into a left-wing authoritarian government. And one more, you know, it's a difficult time.
It is. Yes, but we've watched this, you know, over and over again in South America, where they elect somebody they hate and they basically have to depose him and get them out. And this isn't just Brazil. Name your country, Venezuela, Chile, you go through all these countries by name. And then they'll elect another person that they learn to hate. They can't seem to find a good leader, left or right. I think Venezuela's finally got an okay one. But
he's still a monster.
Yes.
Maduro is a monster. I'm sorry.
You know, so we'll just have to see what happens. It's crazy, but it's not crazy that the Episcopal Church and the Anglicans got themselves in the news there. On to one more story down here.
Mexico.
All right, so this is a complicated one in my mind. I'm going to have you describe it. But yeah, we know that the president of Mexico was deposed. Primate of Mexico was deposed. And not if you ask the Episcopal Church.
Well, back in September, the Archbishop of the Anglican Church of Mexico, mm-hmm. Trevino, not Lee Trevino, he's a golfer, I think, yeah. Enrique Trevino, was deposed as primate, and was deposed as primate. Mm-hmm. And the reason was that it was discovered that the election for the new Bishop of Northern Mexico and his election of primate was basically fraudulent. Mm-hmm. Good old-fashioned Mexican corruption taking place. Well, three bishops in the House of Bishops of the Church of Mexico brought formal charges of misconduct. And in September, Trevino was deposed from office by the Standing Committee of the Church of Mexico. And litigation ensued. And in March, a federal court affirmed the deposition of Trevino. And on April 2nd, the Court of Appeals upheld that earlier decision. And Trevino is now under criminal investigation by the federales for, in regards of breach of governments, breach of trust, procedural and notarial fraud, for allegedly fixing synod and episcopal elections and money changing hands and all this and that. Okay. Corrupt bishop in Mexico. In some respects, this could be a Kevin and George story where he doesn't let me talk about India and corruption. Well, here's the thing. If you go to the website of the Anglican Consultative Council, the guy who was deposed in September is still there, listed as the primate.
That doesn't make any sense. Do they think we're lying? Because,
within like 10 minutes of Jack Eicher and Bob Duncan and people like that, Mark Lawrence being deposed by the Episcopal Church, Bill Love, they were, they disappeared into Never Never Land on the ACC's website. Well, Trevino's still there. Now, why is that? Well, I wrote to the ACC, Ellison Pogo, the new current Secretary General, and I got he's in the Sudan visiting, and we'll take your question under advisement and get back to you. Well, maybe it's only fair for a Mexican issue, I got a Mexican answer. Mañana.
Hasta mañana.
Well, in talking to some of the Mexican bishops, some of whom are actually friends of this show, even though they're liberals, they find us entertaining for some reason. Happy fat gringos that we are.
Greg Gringo.
Gordo Gringo. Evidently, it's an old girls' network at play. What do you mean, George, an old girls' network?
That makes sense. What?
Well, Sally Sue Hernandez is the woman bishop of Mexico City. Mm-hmm. She we had a story about a month or so ago where Francis and Welby invited 50 bishops, 25 Catholic, 25 Anglican, from their countries to Rome to be commissioned together to go out and do joint works together. And the Anglican bishop of Mexico City was paired with a Mexican Roman Catholic bishop, Sally Sue Hernandez. And at the time, the Catholic traditionalists were having heart failure because, oh my goodness, you're commissioning a Catholic and an Anglican bishop to go do ministry. That means you're recognizing this woman's ministry. Well, perhaps, perhaps not. Well, Sally Sue Hernandez is best buddies with Joe Bailey Wells. Well, who's Joe Bailey Wells?
Well, I think she's under the employment of Justin Welby, is she not?
Yes, she used to be his assistant. She's they're spreading the costs, and they've made her assistant secretary general, the Anglican Consultative Council. Mm-hmm. And she runs all these sort of Potemkin shows on taking Lambeth forward and all this and that crap. And she's great friends. And Sally Sue Hernandez has been telling Joe Bailey Wells, No, Trevino is still the man. So even though we've got a federal court in Mexico, and now the appeals court has come in saying this guy is a crook and he's out of there, because friends of friends matter more than truth in the Anglican Consultative Council. And the ACC, we've been at loggerheads going back 15 years with the ACC. You know, when we reported when the Archbishop of Kenya, Eliud Wabakula, told us that the ACC was suborning fraud and forgery within his own church by getting the Bishop of Nairobi to forge a letter allowing him to go to the Zambia Lusaka ACC meeting. And at the time, Josiah Wadau Ferron, the ACC General Secretary, said, Kevin and George are liars, lying liars who lie. Just too bad we had the recording of Eliud Wabakula on the phone with us, telling us this.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of stuff we've had occasional stories with the last one was when we reported the Mozambique bishops were complaining that Ellison Pogo was interfering in the election of a new primate, that the pro-Welby guy had only one supporter, and the anti-Welby team who wanted to join the Global South and ditch the Welby Alliance. There were 10 of them versus 2 pro-Welbyites, and how this guy, Pogo, went down to Mozambique, to Lorenzo Marquez, Maputo it's now called, to try to lobby for the Welbyites. Oh, that's a lie. It's a terrible lie. Then, of course, we have the documents from the Mozambique bishops. So I'm sure something's going to come out. Oh, no, it's a lie. It's a terrible lie. We would not advocate for Bishop Trevino if he were not the true bishop of Archbishop of Mexico, instead of being somebody's friend's friend.
Well, I think it's time for them to tell us why. Why is he still on the website? Why do they still recognize him as the primate of Mexico, even though he's been deposed, rightfully replaced? And it's not just deposed by the church. It's been found proper to depose him by the federal government. So, you know, let us know. If you want to put out a little statement, I will read that statement here on Anglican.inc. But we mentioned Welby. Welby's in trouble again. Well, not in trouble. He's having bad... Yeah, you wrote here the title of the story, Bad Week for Justin Welby. George, he's had a bad week, a bad month, a bad year. This is just a bad decade for Justin Welby. And it's not getting any better. He put out... take away his phone. He put out a tweet congratulating the Muslims for the latest holiday they're celebrating. And I'm watching even liberals on Facebook responding to this Twitter saying, I don't get it. I don't understand where he's coming from. He is so overflowing with gracious words about celebrating Muslim holidays where a happy Easter gets a tweet like happy Easter. So we need to discuss this a little more. Bad week, you say, for Justin Welby.
Yeah, Justin Welby put out a tweet congratulating Muslims on the Eid al-Fitr holiday, which is today.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what it is. I think it's the end of Ramadan or something to do with that.
The week after the
overly Ramadan. Concerned.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, that's nice. You know, it's, you could say it's an innocuous thing. I saw Munir Anis put out something congratulating his Muslim friends on the celebration of their holiday. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say that in and of itself, being polite is a bad thing. For me, the story is this, that the comments, over 1,000 of them at the moment I looked at that tweet, were uniformly negative and angry with Justin Welby. I almost felt like I was watching scenes from the movie Dr. Zhivago, where the peasants are about to march down the street to the White Winter Palace and get rid of the Tsar. The degree of anger that people, and it wasn't just all of a sudden every troll decided to pick on Justin Welby, because there were people with normal names, normal handles, and their own pictures. You're not fake handles, not, you know, robot troll bots or whatever they're called. Just taking Welby to task, saying, why don't you stand up for your own faith? Yeah. Why don't you do something with the Church of England? Why don't you stand up for the English people? I'll call it hatred. There's a degree of hatred for Justin Welby that I have not seen for a religious figure. Nothing like this ever about Gene Robinson or Catherine Jefferts Schori or Bob Duncan or anybody on the other, you know. But Justin Welby has inspire a degree of animosity among rank and file English people that is just surprising me. I would be quite frightened if I were him.
Well, I mean, the problem is not that he's tweeting at the end of the Ramadan fast to congratulate the Muslims for that. The problem is he's not supporting in a balanced way or an overly balanced way his own faith on Twitter. And he's more likely to side on a topic of politics than he is on the side of Christ. He's more likely to side on the side of illegal immigration than he is on the laws of his country. And in as such, he's lost the benefit of the doubt. People are more likely to doubt his sincerity than ever before, and we're seeing this in... you know, in response to his X tweets. I keep saying Twitter, I mean to say X. You know, the formally named business of Twitter is causing social media consumption of Justin Welby to go berserk. You know, it's crazy.
Welby has a problem of believing the news on the first few hours of the story and then looking like an absolute fool afterwards. Mm-hmm. We started, look at the Gaza. His tweets about Gaza have been asinine from the very beginning, from the attack on the hospital, which turned out to be not to an attack, to this week. There's a, you know, Welby had some tweets about some aid workers killed when the Israelis struck a car belonging to the World Kitchen Table. And before there was any investigation, Welby put out a thing saying, this is unconscionable, this is illegal, this violates international law, basically the Jews are bad and evil people. Well, the investigation was done, and what they found was that Hamas had been riding in that car. Hamas operatives got out of the car. They were being tracked by the Israelis. The Israelis called the World Kitchen Table to say, you know, is this, are you guys in bed with Hamas anymore, militants and whatnot? And they didn't get an answer to any of their calls. And so the man on the spot made the decision to strike. Hamas has used from the very beginning hospitals, schools, aid agencies to disguise the movement of their operatives, their terrorists. So the breach of international law here was not the Israelis striking this car. That was a terrible act. That was a terrible accident, but it was a consequence of the breach of international law by Hamas using aid agencies as a cover. You know, all you had to do was wait a day or two or give some anodyne. Isn't it terrible that people are killed? I just hope things are better soon. Instead, we've got this foul outrage that betrays itself each time as being ignorance and moral cretinism.
Sure. Well, here, I'm going to, I pulled up a quote from Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was a president who worked as hard as he could to bring peace to the Middle East. He had the PLO. He had the leader of Israel. He had them to, what's that country state they have here?
Camp David?
Yeah, Camp David. Yeah, where's my brain? He had them to Camp David for 2 weeks. They had a tete-a-tete. And here's what Bill Clinton says. Quote, I killed myself to give the Palestinians a state. I had a deal they turned down that would give them all of Gaza, between 96% and 90% of the West Bank, compensation for land in Israel, you name it. Hamas is really smart. When they decided to rocket Israel, they insulate themselves in the hospitals, in the schools, in the highly populous areas, and they are smart. They said they tried to put the Israelis in a position to either not defend themselves or to kill innocents. They're good at it. They're smart. And that's what they've been doing for a long time. Bill Clinton, Democratic president.
Kevin, he's a right-wing stooge, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, Democratic president of the United States for 8 years. And, you know, he told it like it is. He worked it out and tried to get it and, you know, offered 99% of what the PLO wanted, didn't give it to him. They didn't want it. Crazy. And, you know, people say there has to be a solution in the Middle East. I don't know what it is. You know, if we can't come to some type of agreement, death to Israel is not an agreement. So, all right, George, do we have any other stories? I think we have one last story.
Oh, the Telegraph.
Here. Yes. I did not get any of this in my information feed, but you told me the Telegraph wrote a story about a Welsh vicar who wants to pare down our liturgy to 15 easy-to-feed minutes.
Yeah, the Telegraph had a sort of a complimentary story about a Welsh vicar who wants to create microservices no more than 15 minutes long to entice people to come to church. The idea is that if the burden of being there for at least an hour, hour and 15 minutes, hour and 45 minutes if you come to my 10:30 service, if that's lifted and all you have to do is come for 15 minutes, why, the people just flock back in. Now, you can tell by my arch tone, I think this is one of the dumber ideas I've seen this week.
I don't know. If all I had to spend in church was the time it took me to go through line at Chick-fil-A, you know, maybe. No, it is crazy. And what we're trying to do is make the gospel more palatable. That's not our job. That is not the job of Christians, to make the gospel more palatable and more quick and fast and easy. We're not the McDonald's of religions. You know,
it's one thing to acculturate people. In other words, try to reach them where they are to mm-hmm. make them feel welcome and friendly. It's quite another thing to dumb it down to such an extent that it's like just like punching a ticket. Yeah, I showed up. I got my ticket punched. And it's teaching a theology that you're not going to go to hell just by showing up for 15 minutes. You don't have to believe anything. You have to do anything. You just have to. I think the mistake is that.
You have to love, George. You have to love.
Well, love. You know, in my mind, my way of thinking is if I'm bothering to get in a car and driving someplace, I want to spend at least more than 15 minutes, or that's not even worth the drive.
For us, the enjoyment of going to church is fellowship, it's worship, and it's post-worship fellowship. You know, we're there with our brothers and sisters in Christ. We're there to encourage one another. I'm there to have sympathy with fathers of daughters and to encourage them along. It is a blessing to me to spend my Sundays and other days of the week at church in fellowship with people who believe as I believe, or want to strengthen their belief as I have. So, I don't know. That's crazy.
No,
that's our week of stories.
Absolutely right, Kevin.
Yeah. Church is an event. Liturgy is an event. It's not just something you gotta do drive through. But we had drive through. This is just a another formation of their drive through ashes. You know. So. Crazy. George, it's been a fun week. Please, if you want to help George, where we got 1,000, that's halfway there. We're going to send George to Alexandria, Egypt. What's the dates of that?
June 10th to 16th.
So we kind of want to buy plane tickets sooner than later. So if you don't wait till June 16th to give us some money, please. We appreciate that. Go to anglican.inc/donate and you will be greatly rewarded in news. I'm Kevin Coulson.
And I'm George Conger. And you've been watching episode 850 of Anglican Unscripted.